Welcome to the Natural Health 365 podcast, natural solutions for everyday problems. Are you looking for natural health solutions? Visit naturalhealth365.com for a free subscription to our newsletter, free shows, plus some great gifts. And now, here's your host, Jonathan Landsman.
All right, thank you for joining us. Our show today, Preventing Cancer with the Ketogenic Diet. According to the World Health Organization, cancer is one of the leading causes of sickness and premature death worldwide, with about 14 million new cases reported in 2012 alone. As if that wasn't shocking enough, the number of new cases is expected to rise by about 70%, according to the World Health Organization, over the next two decades. And still, we see Western medicine continue with its failed attempts to treat this disease with toxic drugs and cancer-causing radiation treatments that rarely, if ever, get to the root cause of this disease. Today on the Natural Health 365 podcast, we'll take a closer look at a nutritional approach for cancer patients called the ketogenic diet. On the Natural Health 365 website that we host and run every single day, we've dedicated an entire section to this topic, written by my good friend, the late Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez. But I wanted to get another perspective since it's such a popular diet. And before we get into this, I just want to make it very clear. I present many different sides often to a subject, like, let's say, the ketogenic diet. It is entirely up to you to do your own research. We provide resources and information that we feel is not really covered in the mainstream media, doesn't get enough coverage, I'll be very blunt. And it really is up to you to take this information, dive into it a little deeper, and then, of course, especially when it comes to taking care of yourself or someone that you love with a cancer diagnosis, this is a very deeply personal decision and a journey. So it really is up to you to make what you feel is the best decision for your life. I'm sure you understand. Before we meet our special guest, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. And now, please join me in welcoming Miriam Kalamian, a board-certified nutrition consultant and expert on ketogenic therapies, to our show. Miriam, welcome.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thanks for having me today.
It's my pleasure. Miriam, talk about your own personal experience with the ketogenic diet and cancer as a topic.
Well, Ed, it's very personal for me, yes. Back in 2004, my four-year-old son was diagnosed with brain cancer. And we just got right on board with the standard of care, which for his cancer was 14 months of weekly chemotherapy. And unfortunately, I have to say, it totally failed. His tumor kept growing right through it. So we moved on to the next therapy, which was a couple of very risky surgeries. And it seemed to be the thing that we had to do, but the tumor was growing again a matter of weeks after those surgeries. So then our last best hope at this point was a clinical trial. We enrolled him in that, and he failed that within a few weeks. And at this point, he was getting moved to palliative care. Now, mind you, he's not even seven yet, and we had already run through our options. And that's when I found the diet. I wasn't even looking for a diet, Jonathan. I was looking online at one of the anti-cancer drugs he was on, and just came across a study out of Dr. Seyfried's lab at Boston College, and I just couldn't believe what I was looking at. So it was a study using mice on a ketogenic diet for brain cancer, an aggressive form of brain cancer. But within the paper, there was reference to a study that had been done a decade earlier in two children with very aggressive and advanced brain tumors. And we figured at that point, what have we got to lose? We put him on the diet, and within 3 months, his tumor had stopped growing, and we hadn't seen anything like that with anything that we had done to that point. So, actually, we were just quite blown away.
Miriam, I'm not saying this in a judgmental way at all, especially if any of the healthcare providers are listening to this, but I think a lot of people, by and large, feel that most medical doctors are doing everything they can to research and to present to people all the options possible for a certain situation that comes up. I mean, especially something as important as a cancer diagnosis and how to deal with it. But that's simply, you know, not the case. They're very pressured in their jobs. They're very focused on what they do. They've been trained in a very singular, focused way in terms of pharmacology and surgery and referring. And it's sort of like, you know, I have a doctor friend of mine who puts it like, they're trained to follow a recipe and nothing other than that recipe, no pun intended, since we are talking about food today, a diet. But if it's anything outside that recipe, they don't want to hear about it. They don't entertain it. They don't look into it. They don't spend any time on it. So again, it's not with judgment that I say all this, but I think it's important for people to be sensitive to that reality, that that's just the way they are. So I say all this, Miriam, because I know you have a deeply personal experience with this. So I want you to just give us, you know, your own personal opinion about the cancer care industry today and what problems you see on your end.
Well, it is an industry, unfortunately so. And you nailed it when you said that they can't, you know, they've got the blinders on and they're just looking at, you know, what they've been taught, what they've been trained to do and the algorithms that they're trained to process. They're not looking at prevention, Jonathan. As a matter of fact, a mom just brought that up recently. Why aren't they spending money? Why isn't some of this research money going into looking what the causes are and what the prevention might be? Isn't this upside down? And I have to agree, yeah, you know, walking back a diagnosis of cancer, it's not where we want to be. It's not the situation we want to be in. So, I do think that on the individual level, the oncologists are really trying to do some good. They're doing what they've been trained to do, and I can't fault them for that, but I can say it was an incredibly intimidating experience to bring this up with a doctor, with my son's oncologist, and to have him roll his eyes at me and tell me that a diet wouldn't work, and then he gets his world-renowned buddy on the phone to tell me that the ketogenic diet is for fat people and we should stick to the plan. And at that moment, that plan was palliative care that might extend his life, maybe, but at a cost being, you know, hospitalizations and transfusions and infections, and that's not how we wanted to spend our time with our son. So there is some information out there about risk and prevention, and people really should tune into that because you really want to be, you know, giving your body the best chance at avoiding, at dodging this bullet in the first place, because once you get it, all you're going to get are the standard treatment options. And people don't, they go into this thinking that they're going to have more options than they do, but really it's all algorithm-based. But you need to bring up what you want to do with your oncologist. You can't hide it for being afraid that they're not going to be on board with this. You have to keep them informed as to what you're doing. And if they're that resistant to changing diet, you got to find out why. Is there a real reason that they have that you shouldn't be doing a ketogenic diet, or is it that they just believe diet doesn't matter? Because if that's where they're coming from, then you've got the green light to eat what you want. If they say diet doesn't matter, you can do what you want. If they say, oh, no, you can't do it because your albumin is lower, they have a real reason for it, then that's another issue. But you need to separate out opinions from actual medical concerns.
Well, Miriam, there's so many incredible things you just said in those last few minutes, but I never stop saying this about why I create these programs. And I know the people who listen to this program, they get it. They know that I want them to share this information with somebody else because so many people are on so many different levels, what you said. Either one, they're intimidated, they feel insecure, they don't have the self-esteem to speak up, they don't feel that they're qualified. Okay, that's a major problem. Number two, you have someone who perhaps in the healthcare industry is a bit too full of themselves, maybe a bit too arrogant. Yes, that's a personality thing, we get it. That's just the individual. But you know what, man, when you're talking about someone in a profession to help someone that's in need, and they just take that personality into the medical office and just sort of throw up on the person and give that sort of that attitude of, hey, I just know best. And then you have these other elements that you brought up about, did they just say, don't get into a diet, don't look into anything else but the treatment I'm telling you about, because they believe that it's the best, or that they know? And what I'm suggesting is to a lot of people listening to this program, and I've got a lot of background and over 30 years in health and fitness industry to back me up about what I'm about to say, I venture to say that the vast majority of those healthcare providers are really operating out of a false belief system. They don't have a real personal knowing about the value of nutrition to literally change a life like you do. They haven't really done the medical research, the scientific literature. They haven't read where turmeric, you know, or curcumin, right? Or the ketogenic diet or plant-based foods or antioxidants, how they are so well grounded in nutrition and science and how profoundly powerful it is to help people. They have no knowledge of it. So they just talk off a belief system. They read it off a magazine, a journal, buddies of theirs at a conference said it. So now they believe it too, because it's comfortable and convenient and it doesn't threaten their medical practice. I mean, I could go on and on, but I find that also another element that's huge, Miriam, and I'll get your feedback on this before we move really deeply into the ketogenic diet after this break. The other element that I find so many people are still genuinely shocked about, and I've said it a million times already, is that the research that you mentioned is really backed by just the pharmaceutical industry. So obviously the ketogenic diet, you can't patent it. You can't patent celery, broccoli, you know, a piece of fish, you know, to help people out, salmon with omegas, you know, and recommending that. You can't back this up by having it patented and making money. So why would the pharmaceutical industry research any of this? So I could just go on and on for people to just realize this, not be so surprised, and appreciate where all of this is coming from. We can view people very differently when we go out there and we listen to someone, you know, venture to give us their opinion. We're going to feel a little less intimidated. Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. You know, it was very intimidating. And I want to pick up on something you said, which was that, you know, they're the experts. So, you know, you have a four-year-old child, and the experts are telling you this is what you need to do. And you go, yep, okay, this is his best chance. This is what we'll do. But when all of this failed, then where you're left is, okay, so I send out the same question about what should we do next. And I send it to the 12 members of the Pediatric Brain Tumor Consortium, right, the experts in the field. And I get back a total of 7 replies. One of them already had in hand. So basically 7 replies and 6 different opinions. So here I am, you know, we threw one out right away. So here I am now reconciling 5 different opinions from 6 leading centers. And I'm just a parent. I'm just a mom. So how do you do that when you can't lean on the experts in the medical community? That's where it fell apart for us. That's where we realized there is no consensus. There's the frontline therapy and there's a couple of backups, but when you get a little further down the road, there is no consensus, and that's why I'm such a strong advocate for people getting a second opinion. And you don't get a second opinion from someone within the same sphere. You look outside of that, and you look for the best people you can get. You want a second set of eyes on those reports. You want a second set of eyes on those scans, preferably from somebody who's looked at hundreds of them, not just 5 or 6 a year. And it is your responsibility, it's your right and your responsibility to take your own health care into your hands and help be a part of this team that's making the decisions, not just sit back and let them do it, because they're going to take the familiar path, I guess I should call it. It's a familiar path to them, and they're okay with saying that a 7-year-old child should start palliative care, but I wasn't okay with that.
Miriam, all I can tell you from listening to you for just a few minutes, you are one special mom, that's for sure. We're going to get into what exactly the ketogenic diet is in just a moment. We're going to be talking about why you say that the diet is a very quote-unquote radical movement in oncology, what exactly you mean by that. We're going to also take on some tough questions, like a lot of people hear, oh God, ketogenic diet, boy, that's hard. What would you tell them, you know, as somebody who feels that way and maybe doesn't really have the best information or experience behind them? And what's your best advice for all those people out there who have to, you know, obviously at some point effectively talk to their doctor about all of this that we're going over today? But first, I just want to thank our sponsor, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. So Miriam, as I said, you are certainly an amazing mom, and I'm not just saying that. I really hear your love, your concern, and I can only imagine how tough this was to fight through all of this ideology mixed with attitudes, perhaps a bit of arrogance blended in there, and all the different personalities and characters that you had to deal with all the time that you were going through all this. But, you know, setting all that aside now for a moment, taking a deep breath, you know, just for the new person out there, it's like, all right, already, what is the ketogenic diet and how does it help people concerned with cancer?
Okay, great. Thank you for this question. A therapeutic ketogenic diet for cancer, it is radically different than the standard diet. In a standard diet, you're getting about 45 to 65% of your calories from carbohydrates. In a ketogenic diet, you're getting about 5% from carbohydrates. And you're getting just enough protein to meet your body's needs. And that's about an average of 10% of your total calories. So if you've got 5% coming from carbohydrates and 10% from protein, that other 85% is coming from fats. And that's, you know, that's the issue, you know, one of the issues that the standard conventional nutrition community has is, oh my God, high fat diet, high fat diet, high fat diet. We're fat phobic, and you know, and they see something really damaging and wrong with this. But it works, and it works this way that you don't need to take in any carbohydrate at all through your diet. All of the glucose that your body needs can be made by the liver, and it can be made by the liver from something called glycerol, which is a byproduct of burning fat. So what you're doing by cutting down on the amount of carbohydrate and, you know, switching your body to a fat-burning mode is you're choking down that supply of glucose in the bloodstream. Now, you, like I said, you do need to have some glucose. Your red blood cells need it. There's some brain tissue that needs it. But your liver's going to make exactly what it needs, and that's going to be enough to meet all of the requirements for glucose in your body, but it's not going to supply that extra for the cancer cells. Plus, it's not just about, you know, some people have the idea that this is about starving your cancer of glucose. And yes, what I just described does sound like starving your body of glucose. But the other thing that's happening in a ketogenic diet is that you're making these small energy metabolites called ketone bodies, and that's acetoacetate, beta-hydroxybutyrate, and acetone. And particularly the beta-hydroxybutyrate is a great fuel for the body. And actually, the heart and muscle prefers that over using, prefers ketone bodies in general over using glucose. So, you know, what's the problem here? If we can make this fuel and have brain tissue use it and have muscle use it and heart tissue use it, but you know who can't use it? The adaptations for using ketones are likely to be found in most cancer cells. There's, you know, there's some with a few workarounds, but most cancer cells can't utilize this. They are not as flexible as normal cells. And so you feed them ketones, you're essentially, you know, you're starving them of their preferred energy fuel, but you're also sensitizing them now. They're not getting the nutrition that they hoped for, so you're sensitizing them to some of these anti-cancer therapies. And also, you are increasing the types of activities, the cell house cleaning activities, I call them, that are going to clear out some of these damaged and dysfunctional cells. So what's the problem in giving it a try. Now, what's the problem in doing what we did, which is a three-month trial, and then we get another scan, and we see this amazing response to something that should have not had any response, according to the doctor. And I can't tell you how empowering that was. And, of course, that led me to say, I need to know more. I need to know everything about this, not just a little bit. And that's what I share with people now. That's really important. That's why I wrote the book that I did. That was a long and painful process writing a book and packing as much as I did in there. But I wanted it to be really comprehensive, and there's a lot of science in there. So if people want to understand the science better, it's there. But you don't have to understand the science to do the diet. You just have to have the tools, the mechanics of it, and you can do the diet. And then you can learn about how and why it works later.
Miriam, the name of your book, please.
Keto for Cancer is the easiest way to look at it. Keto for Cancer, my name, and it's available basically now. It's and I'm just so, like I said, so happy that it's finally out there. It's been so painful for me to have this long period of time where I didn't really have this to share with people.
Miriam, would you say, I mean, not that it's really related to what we're doing now, but just, you know, in case somebody's wondering about this, is this diet that you describe where it's 85% fat, 10% protein, and 5% carbs, would you say that this kind of way of eating is good for everybody or really just someone who's dealing with a cancer diagnosis?
There are some very well-defined situations that this is approved for, and the one with the highest level of evidence is pediatric epilepsy, intractable pediatric epilepsy. It's gone through all the trials for that. It's an evidence-based treatment for that. We are getting there with diabetes, definitely, with diabetes, metabolic syndrome, polycystic ovary syndrome, and you've got to put obesity in there, you know, even just being overweight and or obese, you're dealing with insulin resistance, and this diet can reverse that. And that information is really moving to the forefront, and I love that is becoming sort of the default for a diet that can actually reverse diabetes and not just sort of like manage it marginally and watch, you know, as my husband likes to say, the bumper's falling off the car as you're going down the road, which is what happens with diabetes. The other thing that I feel it's really powerful for, and I've worked with several people with Parkinson's disease, and there you don't have to go full ketogenic. You just, you know, a very low-carb, no-junk diet. And there's going to be a surge in the use of ketone supplements for Parkinson's. That's going to be more effective than just diet alone. And I believe that's going to be true for Alzheimer's as well. There's some amazing researchers looking at this right now because ketones are actually a better fuel for the brain than glucose is. And our brains, you know, as we get older, we have more problems with utilizing glucose as the primary fuel in the brain. Not so with ketones. There's some research coming out of Canada that is showing that even under mild cognitive impairment and even Alzheimer's, that the brain can still utilize ketones. So that's going to be a whole new area and a really important area because you look at what we have now for Parkinson's or drugs. What we have now for Alzheimer's is basically nothing. None of the hundreds of drugs they've tested have moved the needle very much, and they've certainly not reversed the disease. And yet we're seeing with you know, ketogenic or low-carb diet, we're seeing improvements in cognitive functioning. And it's just not getting out there for the same reasons it doesn't get out there in cancer. And as far as prevention goes, well, my husband and I, you know, we walk the walk. We just don't talk the talk. So we are ketogenic. And threshold ketosis. I'm not aiming for really high levels of ketones. I just want to be in the fat burning mode most of the time. And part of that is because I really feel that as we get older and, you know, the pressures from the environment and the pressures from our stressful lives and, you know, the toxins in the foods that we eat, all of those things are working against us. And we've got to beat the odds if we want to be zooming off the cliff at full speed. You know, I don't want to be limping towards it. I want to be zooming off at top speed. And I feel by keeping to ketogenic diet, I'm giving myself the best chance to do that. I don't see anything dangerous or unnatural about this. We make ketones all the time, and we make them especially overnight Pregnant women make them. These are going into their babies, ketones. So there's nothing unusual or abnormal about it. What's different is that we live in a society where we don't have to be in ketosis because we could just go to the cupboard and get some cookies or go to the refrigerator, you know, and eat some leftover pizza. So we don't have to force our bodies to do this. But, yeah, I'm telling my body, you do this. You stay in ketosis. My brain is sharp, and I really like that. I feel better now than before I started all of this. So, yeah, I'm a really strong proponent. And I think it's okay maybe not to do this. Be very careful about your diet, like a paleo-style diet. But once you get past middle age, I don't think nature really cares about us past that point. And so then it becomes our responsibility to manipulate, to change that mix of foods that we're eating, to give ourselves the best chance at living not just longer, but better.
So, Miriam, a couple of interesting questions we'll get on the backside of this break coming up. And also, I want to get your best advice on what people should be saying to their doctor. I think that'll be finishing off this program in a very important way. But finally, I just want to thank our sponsor one last time, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. So, Miriam, real quick, I mean, we have just a few things to do in a few minutes we have left here, and I know they're important. People say the diet is so hard. It's so hard. What do I do? What do you tell them?
I tell them that everything surrounding a cancer diagnosis is hard, and that it was hard to submit our son to surgery. And compared to that, the diet is a walk in the park. So I agree the diet is a commitment, but too hard, it just doesn't work for me. But I have to say, I don't try to convince people. I educate, and then they decide.
Perfect. And again, this is probably the most important question because it's at that critical time where people can be intimidated. What's your best advice to patients or perhaps caregivers, most likely, of those who go in with patients, right? Because sometimes they're just so depleted, they can't speak for themselves, they have no energy. We understand that. How do we go about effectively talking to the doctor about all of this? What are your suggestions?
Well, I suggest, first of all, be respectful and expect respect back from them. And you should not become confrontational, but if they become confrontational and it looks like that's an impediment to your communication with them, find another doctor. There's plenty of oncologists out there. Even within the same practice, there's going to be someone that is more amenable to listening to what your questions and concerns are. If they can't listen to your questions or concerns, they should not be the person that is in charge, because that's how they view it, in charge of your care. You're the person in charge of your care, and you've got to keep that in mind, that as hard as that might be to try to make some of these decisions, this should be shared decision-making. It shouldn't be top-down. So, yes, listen to what they have to say, and like I said before, get a second opinion. Even if it mimics the first opinion, at least you have two opinions instead of just going with what you hear up front. And, you know, regarding your loved ones, well, usually it's adult children that contact me and they say, oh, you got to convince my mother to do this or something similar to that. And, you know, I say that even if that person is totally sold on the diet, if the person with cancer is not, you can educate and help them make as good a relationship with their team as possible. There are teams out there. There are oncologists out there that will work with you on this. They're not going to come out and say they support it, but they may say something like, I don't have any objections to it, or, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, just keep doing it, you're fine. And that's the kind of team that you want, Jonathan. And it's a little more work, and boy, I see so much better results when people can be either strong self-help advocates or when they have a loved one that is an advocate for them. Because like you said, they are. They're overwhelmed. They're depleted. They're stressed out. But so are their caregivers. So everybody needs to sort of take care of themselves, kind of ratchet down some of this confrontation that goes on. You want them to be part of a team.
Miriam, I love your advice. Everything is common sense. It's the way to go. We should be really well educated ourselves and treat everybody with respect. For those who are interested, Keto for Cancer. Look up the book by Miriam. Check it out yourself. We'll have a link on this page for the podcast. And Miriam, I want to thank you so much for your time today. Really do appreciate it.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity, Jonathan. This is so important to me to get the word out on this.
The show was brought to you by NaturalHealth365.com. Are you looking for natural health solutions? Visit NaturalHealth365.com for a free subscription to our newsletter, free shows, plus some great gifts. Thank you for listening, and be sure to join us next week for another great show.